Let's return to our conversation with Kelly and Donna Mulholland about their book, True Faith, True Light, The Devotional Art of Ed Stille.
Well, tell us about this mission. So how did you meet the Stilles, and how did you kind of decide that it was time to somehow collect these instruments and then take pictures of them and allow them to find their way into a book that everybody could enjoy and see?
Well, that's a great story. I have a good friend who's a massage therapist, and I went to her home to have a massage, and this was 20 years ago, and she and her husband were neighbors years ago of Ed, like next door neighbor, just up the hill from Ed, so they knew them quite well. And when I went over her house, she had one of his instruments. He had given her and her husband one of his instruments, and it was sitting on their mantle of their fireplace, and I was like, what is that? That is the most interesting instrument. And she told me about Ed Stille. And way back then, we were just starting to write songs about people that lived in the Ozarks. We had a couple under our belt, and it was something we were fascinated with anyhow, is the stories of the Ozarks. And I said, Kelly has to see this. So I ran home, grabbed him by the ear, took him over there, and he was enthralled as well. So the next week, she arranged and brought us to the Stille's home for an introduction. And we've been fast friends and have been kind of become part of their family.
We started visiting regularly. I was fascinated to see him work.
So in looking at the pictures in this book, one of the most fascinating moments for me and chapters is his workshop. And this thing is unbelievable, but at the same time, just piled with...
It's beautiful. All the buildings are just look like they're just pieced together from fragments of wood scraps.
And they were.
Yeah.
And so it's a building with a jigsaw puzzle of irregular wood scrap.
One building leads to another. They're all kind of just cobbled together.
He lined the walls with improvised workbenches, and they're all covered with thick layers of wood scraps and metal objects and all manner of hand tools and unfinished projects. And the floor is hardly discernible from the tops of the wood benches, strewn with all kinds of ingredients for potential instruments, and things dangle from nails in every nook and cranny. It's just a work of art in itself.
It's the work of art that made the work of art.
Yeah.
Yeah. I found many precious things in there. Unfinished frames. I found all kinds of peg heads and just interesting things. I looked forever to find a jingler. I still have not found a jingler in the raw. You know, I thought there must be one somewhere in there. And there's no light in there, so it's really hard to see what you're doing.
Did he work at night?
Well into the night, because all day he was having to farm and do his chores.
Right.
So he said he would, many nights he would stay up most of the night working on these.
He actually used to loan me instruments long before he gave me this butterfly guitar. He would leave me with beautiful instruments, and I'd take them home and play with them for about a month, and I'd take them back. And next time I was there, they'd be gone. Who knows where they ended up? A whole bunch of instruments that I remember that I still don't know to this day where they are.
He made instruments for?
25 years.
And he made over 200?
At least. It could be well over that, but at least 200. It's hard to say because there's such sketchy
documentation. Now, he had a notebook that he kept a little bit that had a list of people who wanted the instruments.
Yes,
but he didn't keep a detailed list of where they went, right?
And the notebook disappeared.
Yeah.
When we started the search and wanted to find these instruments, they looked for that notebook and they could not find the notebook. So
right.
We put ads in the Eureka Springs newspaper. Eliza and different family members helped us find them. So it was like a treasure hunt. It was like being detectives to try to find the ones we found.
Yeah, the reality is that one instrument kind of led to another one. It seemed like each person that had one knew of another one.
I just remember like I would go get on somebody that's just steel string guitar. It's like a very professionally made guitar, and they all sound exactly the same. And then I got on this one, and the first sense I got was that it was off a little or something like that. And then I started realizing it has its own unique sound and feeling to it. And so then once I got to where I could play a little better, then I would get on there and actually play something. And then still, when I jump on it for the first time, it's like, okay, it doesn't sound right. And then you just play for a second and you're like, wow, I'm hearing it. And then you start to hear it from a different perspective, and it brings out the different overtones and all these different things that seem wrong at first, but then come out as something more beautiful later.
That was Stille guitar owner, Johann Pott.
And so we just kept stumbling into another one. I think now we're almost up to 50. When we did the book, there was about 35 instruments that we had there. So a man named Darren, who had an insurance business in Berryville, was very proud of his Edgely instruments. He had it hanging in his office. It was his pride and joy. And his son had one, and his mother had one.
I'd wanted one for years. I hated to ask him.
I know the feeling.
We had the same thing.
You know, and finally, probably went on 2 or 3 years, got my nerve up, because he said, I'm a year or two behind on building these things. So I thought, well, I'm going to ask. I said, Ed, just put me on your list. I don't care how long it takes. If you can, it takes fine. He said, well, I'm behind. I said, okay. And he had that guitar with him. And off he went, went home, played a song, went home, or went to the parking lot. Well, pretty soon here he came back. And he handed me that guitar. And I said, well, Ed, what are you doing? He said, it's yours. Oh. Ed, you don't have to do that. He said, no, God told me to give you this guitar. I said, well, Ed, if God told you to give me that guitar, that's fine, I'll keep it.
That was still a guitar owner. Darren McCullough.
Well, he was a big fan of Ed Stilley's work, and he happens to be the one who was in Eureka Springs and saw an instrument in the dumpster, and it would soon have been compacted. And he had the wisdom to say, would you mind if I grab that? And he picked it up, and all 6 strings were on it. It was still in tune. It turns out, I call it the junkyard guitar. It's maybe my favorite Ed Stilley instrument. It plays really, really well. It's got the best reverb of any of them.
Darren has given us lifetime borrowing of it. He wants us to share it, and he's letting us use it with the hope and dream that someday it'll be in the Smithsonian.
Shine down your light upon my heart, Lord. Light up the road I'm a traveling on. Don't let me stray too far from the center. Guide my life both night and day.
And back to your question about basically how did we make the transition to feeling like the rest of the world needed to know about this? That's hard to answer. You know, I from the very moment I saw this, I felt like I was looking at some of the most important folk art that the state of Arkansas has ever produced.
Or the country.
Yeah, or the country for that matter. The creativity is just off the chart. And also the authenticity and the fact that he wouldn't take money for them. He would not sign them because they were made by God only through his hands. That kind of thing. It all added up to the perfect storm of folk art. And folk art is something that is becoming more and more difficult to define in this day and modern age. And this felt like it was the last true example of folk art that we may encounter.
Shine down your light upon my heart, Lord. Light up the road I'm a traveling on. Don't let me stray too far from the center. Guide my life both night and day.
I felt the need to share this because Ed had no desire for self-promotion. He was happy to have done what he did. All he wanted to do was put those words, true faith, true light, have faith in God out into the world, and to fulfill his obligation, the deal he'd made with God. These objects were not made as art. In fact, that never would have occurred to Ed at all. And I think he was most surprised to see all of us, you know, clamoring over what we were calling art, to see them in galleries now.
Yeah. When we did our first exhibit at the Walton Arts Center, a 3-room exhibit of his work, and Ed got to come to the exhibit, mm-hmm. and there were 200 people. And this is an example of how pure he was. So he'd never been in a gallery. He didn't really know what was going on. They wheeled him in. Here's his life work. And he's got a little bread sack. He had made cassettes of himself preaching and singing. And we're wheeling him around. He's not even looking at the wall. He's handing people his little cassettes, mm-hmm. of his preaching and singing. And it was so moving. And people were so moved by his presence because he was so authentic.
I've seen the work that the devil can do. Souls by the wayside, what misery. Keep your eye on the love light. Jesus will save your weary soul. Shine down your light upon my heart, Lord. Light up the road I'm a traveling on. stray. Don't let me stray far from the center. Guide my life, oh, night and day. Guide my life, oh, night and day.
On that resurrecting morning, we will understand how John got his revelation story from that glory land beyond. With the light of heaven shining, where the soul will never die, we will understand it better when we gather in the sky.
Was he must have been stunned, though, to just confront, because he never kept them for that long, right? So to see them, so many of them in one room.
He was just glad that people were reading those words.
He'll sit in the chair and people will come up to him and he'll say, over and over, he'll say, well, we tried. We did
They'll
the best.
They'll say, Ed, this is beautiful. And he'll say, we tried.
We did the best we could. And when he says we, it's God and him.
Oh, I want to see him look upon his face. That are thankful up, that are of saving grace. On the streets of glory, let me lift my voice. Care though past, home and last, labor to rejoice.
You know, one thing that I would love to talk about a little bit is, and it took me a while to understand how Ed seems like he is stuck in 1940. And how could somebody, you know, if you go to their house, it looks like you're going back in time. Okay, nothing changed there. They have electricity, but it's just like a bare light bulb hanging from the ceiling. You know, it's very simple. There's kind of an answer to this puzzle of how he's stuck in time. And it has to do with his devotion. And I found this out quite recently. When he was 20 years old, he made a declaration that he would never read anything for the rest of his life except the Bible. And so he closed himself off to everything else. He lived with that Bible at hand. The Bible was always within reach of him, all of the time. And his Bibles are precious. They're very tattered because they've been used hour after hour, day after day. And every single page has got his writings on the margins, not just some pages, but every page.
And I asked Liza, asked if I could have that one of the Bibles to use in our exhibit that we were going to be doing and to share with people. And she took me into a bedroom and she had a dresser drawer with like six dresser drawers, and she opened them up and they were filled with Bibles that he had worn out because every couple of years he goes through one. So she picked one out for me and gave it to us. But it's a work of art in its own self too.
Donna, would you play a little on the fiddle for us? It's just so pretty sounding.
Thank you. You know, they only prefer to have gospel music played in their home. And so Liza asked us if we would record several hymns so she could hear Ed's instruments played by us. And so I'll play one of them. This is Liza's favorite hymn, of course.
The art's amazing. The guitars are amazing. And the story is phenomenal. But yet, even beyond that, you seem to have such a personal connection to his work and the family. What's the inspiration?
I just wouldn't let it go. Year after year, I just wouldn't let it go. And just kept slowly working towards this goal.
The unseen hand.
But Ed, clearly, he sees us and as instruments of God, you know, as if we're doing the work of God for him. But I must say, it's very fulfilling because my dream was simply to get the word out, to make sure that his legacy was appreciated and solidified. And so the making of the book was huge in terms of feeling like I'd accomplished that and that we had reached the place where we wanted to go. And then with the Old State House Museum in Little Rock, undertaking this huge, full-on exhibit of his work.
We're so honored.
I feel like we made it. This dream was actually fulfilled.
Yeah.
It chills me even as I speak those words because it's true. It makes me so happy that we were able to get to that that finishing point. Yeah. I mean, the only thing that could happen now that would top that is to get over to the Smithsonian Museum.
Well, I wouldn't doubt that the one instrument you recovered from the trash
could get there. Yeah. You know, one thing to answer your question, too, also is that Kelly and I have always been fascinated with folk art. We travel around the country. We seek out folk art people and extravaganzas and places. It's just something that's part of what we love and are fascinated by. So when we met Ed and found this, we did feel like we had discovered the finest treasure in the Ozarks and felt compelled.
No, yeah. He's just like he always was.
Yep.
It's Dilly.
This is an amazing story. It has everything. Could you guys kind of finish us out with maybe playing a song together?
All right, we'll do it. Here we go. 1, 2, 3.
Broadcast from the studios of KUAR in Little Rock, you've been listening to Arts and Letters. Thanks for joining us. To check out past episodes, go to artsandlettersradio.org. Leave us a comment there and let us know what you've thought about the program. Thank you to composers, singers, and songwriters, Kelly and Donna Mulholland.
Carved on the top, true faith, true light. Have faith in God.
A special thanks to the songwriting and musicianship of Jeff Umbauer.
Upon my heart, Lord, light up the road. I'm a traveling on.
Thank you to Ed Stilley guitar owners, John Pott, and Darren McCullough for talking about your relationship with Ed Stilley and the instruments he gave you. Thank you to all who helped make this possible, including Jeremy Lane, Thomas Clifton, Julian Miraville, Ephraim McNair, Mary Ellen Cubitt, Caitlin Worley Strang, Veronica Wurgis, Chris Long, Chuck Hancock, and Krista Hancock for graciously giving Arts and Letters your time and love. Thank you to Sticky's Rock and Roll Chicken Shack for keeping music alive and well in Arkansas. Generous funding for this episode was provided by the Arkansas Humanities Council and the National Endowment for the Humanities. A special thanks to Mark Stewart and Rob Schwimmer of Polygraph Lounge for your devotion to this project and these instruments. Thank you to Kelly and Donna Mulholland for taking us on this spiritual journey of recovery and reconciliation, and for the book and the music you've been able to produce that moves the spirit to do things that everyone else thinks is impossible. For Arts and Letters, I'm J. Bradley Minnick. Let's heed the words of Ed Stilley. Someone told me you can't make guitars out of thick sawmill wood, but I remembered that the Lord never taught me the word can't, so I went right ahead and started making them.
Faith, true light, have faith in God.